Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to Ninercast. That's Tom Jensen, a.k.a. at Ninercast on Twitter. I'm Grant Cohn, a.k.a. at Grant Cohn on Twitter. How you doing, Tom?
Doing okay, Grant. How are you?
Good. Today's Thursday. In 2 weeks, the draft starts. So it's time.
Here we go.
We're going to have we're going to look into BetUS's NFL draft bets. They've got a lot of them. Really cool. We're going to talk about Brock Purdy. Excuse me. I don't know if we will. People might ask about it. I meant to say Brandon Ayuk, but I want to start with draft stuff because all of a sudden I'm an expert. It's that time of year. It happened quick.
Speed. Yeah, yeah.
A few weeks ago, I didn't know who you guys were, but now I have very strong opinions. No. I want to know what Tom thinks about the offensive tackles. He's talked about it before. I've asked him before, yeah. But I think me and the audience probably is more educated and probably better ready to hear it. So we're seeing mock drafts every day. Today, one from NFL Network had the Niners taking Kingsley Suamataia at 31. We've seen Roger Rosengarten. That's what Mel Kiper thinks. We've seen Jordan Morgan, all kind of different offensive tackles, and not just offensive tackles, but I think that's the position that a lot of fans and analysts think is the spot to go to. So why don't we go through the different offensive tackle options that the Niners might have at the end of round one?
Okay.
And what do you think of them?
I think there's six offensive tackles that can start on day one. And for the Niners, the fifth and sixth might fall far enough down so that they can trade up for them. So I would think that the last of the six is probably, according to most mocks, Amarius Mims. That's the guy that I like from Georgia. Coach likes him as well. 6'8", 340, and very athletic, very fluid. He plays with low leverage. He plays with great power. He's got huge wingspan, so it's very tough to get past him. And he doesn't give up sacks. He played exceptionally well against Ohio State in 2022. He's proven that when he does play, he can play exceptionally well. But the issue is he's only played 8 games. And he's had injury problems. He had tightrope surgery last year, recovered from that, played well. But he still has had the injury bugaboo. And he had an injury problem running his second 40 at the combine. So there are people that are worried about, you know, can he last? And given that this is just college and he's already had these injuries and he's missed time, what's going to happen in the league? And it comes down to what's your medical evaluation of Mims. But in terms of the player himself, you look at the games that he's played, he's been dominant. He's a great player. So the question is, are you willing to take that gamble? Are you willing to make that risk? The Niners might. They could trade up. We'll see.
If it were his knee, I'd say no. But it doesn't necessarily sound like it's a degenerative issue at something like that. So I would think absolutely. Do you consider him a developmental prospect? Because I've seen some people say that. Or do you think
some
he's a guy?
He does need work because he just hasn't had enough college reps. Mm-hmm. So he needs to make better decisions. Sometimes his timing can be off or he'll take a wrong angle or something like that. It's things that are easily fixed, but things that still need to be worked on. So I would say that there are some people that are just put him in the shop and you've got a red shirt for a year. I don't think that's Mims. I think that Mims is going to need some time to develop first, but that he would be able to take the field in the year and probably sooner than later.
Makes
sense. As opposed to the other guys that probably need a lot more work. So going on to those, Tyler Guyton is from Oklahoma, also 6'8", also big, huge frame. The problem is that he doesn't play as low as Mims does. He plays high. He can bend at the waist. He can miss. He'll have timing issues. He'll hold his hands too wide. The defender can come into his chest and then use his height against him. And so for Guyton, it's more a question of polish, hand usage, leverage, technique. And those are things that take time. Yeah, he's got the frame. He's got the physicality. He's got good feet. He's got good size. But he hasn't put it together yet. So I think that Guyton would be a redshirt.
Redshirts are not what the Niners want to draft in round one. Shout out to Trey Lance.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't think that they should take Guyton, but that's my take on it.
Okay.
But there are others that might disagree. And you look at him physically and just say that He has the juice. I mean, he's got the frame. He's got.
He could be a real left tackle one day.
Yeah, he could.
Yeah.
In Oklahoma, great coaching in Oklahoma. That's always been a good program at O-line.
Yeah.
Then you go to Jordan Morgan from Arizona.
Okay.
I think he's more developed as a pass protector than a run blocker.
Okay.
And he tends to lock onto his man in stonewall as opposed to driving him off the line.
Okay.
And so the question with Morgan is, again, timing, technique, consistency, and just what exactly is he going to be able to do in a tackle role? Some people think he's better at guard. Some people think that he can play tackle. I think he'd be a good guard. He's got great movement skills, great feet. But is that what you really want to do at 31? You want to take a guy that you thought might play tackle and then move him inside? I mean, that's not something I would do at 31. The evaluation of Morgan is 40s, basically, is that's where he's ranked. You know, Daniel Jeremiah has him 49th. ESPN has him in the 40s. So he's not really a first-round talent. I mean, if you want Jordan Morgan, okay, but drop down.
Okay.
And then Kingsley Suamataia, he has tremendous tools. I mean, he's a 5-star recruit coming out of high school, and so he has everything you would want physically. He had 31 bench reps at the combine.
Oh, wow. Excellent.
Very strong.
That's nice.
He's quick. He's got 21.5 in the GPS as a freshman on the field, just play speed. So he's got speed. He's got power, but he needs to put it all together. And that's something he hasn't done yet, is that, again, it's timing, hand placement, leverage, all of those factors coming into play. What's his anchor like? His anchor can get beat. And so can he put it together? Yeah. And if he did, he could be a left tackle. But, again, you still got technique development work to do with him. I'm not sure that he's someone that would play in his first year also. I'm not convinced of that. He might be, but he'd have to be a quick learner, and he'd have to be able to make that all happen. He could. He's got the talent. I talked to Marco about him yesterday, and he said that Kingsley is a great worker. His coaches think that he's a quick learner. He's motivated, a great teammate, great person. So you've got all that to work with, but
Penei Sewell's
still
cousin.
Have development. Yeah, and Penei Sewell, there's some great DNA. So he could. It's just a question of what's your confidence level in when he can get to the point that he can play well at an NFL level against NFL competition with similar size, strength, speed.
Let me ask you a question before we move on to other prospects. The ones we've mentioned so far, how would they compare to, let's say, Mike McGlinchey coming out of Notre Dame in 2018?
McGlinchey, I hated the pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As I've told you before, I think that pick was made
for ninth management in the draft. Reasons.
Yeah. And in a loaded draft.
Yeah.
But they picked him because Trent Brown wanted out, and mm-hmm. Parag said, no, we don't want to pay you, and so we're going to draft your replacement. Drafting the tackle replacement in a draft that had Minka, Derwin James, what are you doing? Anyway, to McGlinchey, he was a run blocker first, and in pass pro he wasn't really all together there. And that was basically his career, is that he could make run plays for you, and that's what Kyle valued. That's why he was chosen. But he would have to reach and really struggle to pass protect. That he would literally leave his feet to make sure that he could get him out and make the play, get contact. So he had a lot of work. He had a lot of power that he needed to develop and didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wasn't really ready. And if I had to say, okay, so who's the McGlinchey equivalent? Probably Guyton, in that he has some run blocking ability, but still has a lot of work to do.
I guess I'm asking if McGlinchey were in this draft coming out of Notre Dame in 2024, where would he have gotten taken? Round two?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's neither here nor there.
And then the last one is Raj Rosengarten.
Yeah.
And Kiper has doubled down on him. He's picked up twice now at 31 for the Niners in his last two mocks. And I can see it. He's working with Joe Staley. He worked with Ed McCaffrey in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows the system, and he's got people that can vouch for his character, his play level, his competition. And Rosengarten did a great job at UW. He protected the blind side for Penix, even though he's playing right tackle since Penix is a lefty. And he did well. You know, he makes the most of what he has in terms of power, technique, movement skills, great feet. So he can work, but he only had 20 when you compare that to Suamata Ia at 31 in terms of bench reps. So he's got a lot of power work to do in the weight room. And until he does that, it's an issue. I mean, we've seen that with Spencer Burford, where he lacks NFL strength and he loses on the offensive line as a result. You need to sync up your timing with your power. And I think that Rosengarten would struggle with that coming out of the gate. So he's another one where you couldn't start him right away.
I was looking up other offensive linemen to compare him to, and I found one guy who I was surprised. He ran a 4.88, which is just blazing fast, at 315 pounds. He put up 23 reps on the bench, which was less than I was expecting, considering this guy is an all-time great. You know who I'm thinking of?
No.
Trent Williams.
Yeah, yeah, makes 23. Sense.
Now, I'm not comparing Roger Rosengarten to Trent Williams.
No, well, Trent's an all-time talent in terms of physical gifts. But yeah, but if I know that he was really
line up the combine results from Trent Williams and Roger Rosengarten, man, Roger held his own. Roger really did a good job at the combine.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. He ran really fast.
Yes.
And his 10 time was excellent.
Good. I mean, he's a good athlete. Drills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did everything across the board really well.
Yeah.
But you still have
below average
power.
Yeah.
And so if you lack NFL core strength, can you take the field? Probably not, especially a tackle. So, you know, what can you do? And I think that 31 would be over.
Moving to guard doesn't help that.
No. I don't think he should play guard. I think that the strength of Rosengarten is that he's great on an island. He's very good in space. And the question becomes is just how long would it take him to power up, literally? I don't think
McGlinchey put up 24 reps on the bench. Yikes. So now you're taking someone who has less reps than McGlinchey.
And we saw what happened when McGlinchey was in pass pro, that was exploited.
Now, one thing with McGlinchey, he was 6'8". So he had a combination of being high cut and not physically strong. At least Rosengarten's a little lower to the ground. But I was the comparison would be Joe Staley. Joe Staley put up 27 reps on the bench.
Yeah. And Staley powered up quickly on top of that.
Yes, he did.
And Rosengarten can do that. The other thing to factor in is that Rosengarten is only 21. He turns 22 in June. So, you know, part of this is just body maturity. Once his body matures, his physicality can take hold and he can power up. But until then, like
two offensive
can
linemen,
he start? No.
It seemed like the offensive linemen you had the nicest things to say about were Amarius Mims, who may not be there for the 49ers at 31, and Kingsley Suamataya.
Yeah. Because both of them have the core strength you need to succeed. Mm. Both of them have length and great feet. And so they've got the physical tools that you need to succeed. And they're people that can go to left tackle because they have those skills and tools and succeed there. But with Mims, I think that his ceiling is much higher than Kingsley's, and that Mims has only played 8 games, and we've already seen what he can do in those 8. Once he does get coaching experience and polish, what can he become? And I think that the ceiling on Mims is all pro, and the ceiling on Kingsley, you know, maybe Pro Bowl. Different thing.
Yeah. Still, though, for Kingsley, I'm looking at his raw athletic numbers. He ran a 5.04. It's nice at 326 pounds. I mean, he's a big dude.
He moves really well.
Yeah, he's got 34 1/4-inch arms. I mean, he's definitely he's probably more gifted than Rosengarten, just physically.
He is, but Rosengarten makes better use of the tools that he has in terms of technique.
Okay.
And being able to survive on an island, like I said, and that he proved that no sacks at Washington, that he did a great job protecting Penix. So I think that Rosengarten, it's mainly just you've gotten most of the technique, just add the power. With Kingsley, he needs the technique, so he's got to put it together. And there are some teams that love Kingsley. There's some that don't. Part of the thing with these tackles is the sight of the beholder. You know, ESPN reported today that New England is really high on Kingsley, and they're doing research on him, a lot of homework, they're targeting Sua Mataia.
Oh, they have like the best offensive line coach in football.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or one of them, along with the coach in Philly. But yeah, and I would think that there's definitely something to be said for the people who know O-line well value Kingsley. And so they're going to say that we think this guy can really be something. But those teams are also more willing to say, we're going to put in the time to develop him. The Niners are more of a, we want to compete now. And so if that's the case, the Niners might say that we don't want to wait for a development project, especially at 31. We want somebody that can play now.
All right, let's talk a defensive end or a defensive lineman the 49ers could take at 31 instead of an offensive tackle. Marshawn Nyland. You brought him to our attention in your latest article on SI.com/NFL/49ers. Check it out. What should we know about him?
He's the best edge setter in the draft at edge, and that's something the Niners need. That's what they have needed for a while now, is somebody that can really set the edge at the edge. He's the best at it. His run stats are off the charts, and he's got a lot of good developmental tools. 6'3", now let me pull up everything on Nyland. 6'3", 276. Yeah, 6'3", 267. He's got 34.5-inch arms, ran a 166.10, 475.40, 418 in the shuttle, 702 in the three-cone. 37 pressures, 6 sacks, 17% pass rush win rate, 34% one-on-one win rate, and 35 stops, which is really high, very good number. So he's produced, and he's somebody that they're bringing in for a 30 visit, and he brings the talent that they need. This is one skill set they don't really have, is stopping the run at the edge. And so I think he's someone they're going to look at. He's getting a lot of buzz now. He's moving up. He was thought to be a late second. Now he's moved up in some to mid-second to early second. So he's in ascendancy, and we'll see where he goes.
It's going to be interesting to see how the Niners configure their D-line. It's like, that's a position they like to go 8 deep at. They'll have entire series where they'll have all 4 backups on the field at once. And it seems like that's Chris Kocurek's sort of choice. That's how he likes to rotate players through. So we know their starters most likely will be Nick Bosa, Javon Hargrave, Malik Collins, Leonard Floyd. Now, what is the next wave of defensive linemen going to be? Your Tergros Matos is getting paid like he's going to be one of them.
Sure.
Jordan Elliott, those two for sure. And then after them, it's kind of murky. It could be Kevin Givens, I guess. No offense. I mean, he's just on a 1-year deal for not that much money. And then Drake Jackson.
Yeah. And we don't really know. It's just.
So a DN would actually could play for the 49ers. Maybe he wouldn't play a lot, 25, 30% of the snaps, but unless he could believe in Drake.
Yeah. Well, but with Nyland, it's someone who he could start in the base defense and be part of your run D and be real solid. And that's something they definitely need. And so we'll see. The history works for him also. If they take D-line in this draft, it'll be 4 times in 8 years that they take D-line with their first pick.
Well, I think what's tough about projecting what the Niners are going to do on their D-line this year is because Staley's here. Brandon Staley's here. And I think they're going to be doing new things on the D-line. Like, is Yetur Gross-Matos going to start? Or is Leonard Floyd going to start? Or are the Niners going to start doing some simulated pressures on first and second down? Because it seems like that simulated pressure thing is like the whole new wave in the NFL. And the Seahawks want to run it. And the Niners want to run it. And the Chiefs are running it. And the Ravens are running it. So that would be a big thing. And I think it's possible Leonard Floyd starts. So you could see them do those kind of things. Drop him into coverage. Yeah. Bring a corner or a safety or a linebacker as the fourth rusher instead. I think we're going to see that. So in which case, is Yetur Gross-Matos going to be Bosa's backup on the other side? Or are we going to see Bosa dropping in? I don't think we're going to see Bosa dropping into coverage.
No.
Although, don't the Ravens drop their nose tackle into coverage sometimes?
Yeah.
Don't they do that? They do.
They do it with everybody.
We could see that from Hargrave or something.
Yeah, possibly. But yeah, simulated pressure is going to take over the league. That's the hot trend for this year. Everybody's going to try to do that. Niners included. And it's part of why Staley is that first they reached out and Kyle wanted to talk to Spags and that's when Kansas City re-upped them. And so then they move on to Staley to get somebody that has some knowledge in that area.
And why is it the big thing right now? Well, it doesn't seem like Kyle Shanahan has the answers for it right now.
No.
He got beat by it over and over and over again in the Super Bowl and against the Ravens.
Yeah, and that's the thing that threw me was that I thought that Kyle would be able to go to school on simulated pressure based on facing Baltimore.
Right.
And look what Baltimore did. Five picks, all that pressure, those sacks.
Yeah.
And did Kyle learn much? Not really. You know, Kansas City did similar things and had 9 unblocked rushers in blitzes.
No, he didn't learn. But to his credit, it seems like he's trying to learn now. It seems like he brought in Staley to teach him, or at least to be the expert on this one. So it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, the Niners are a rush four team, but you can still rush four without it being the same four every snap, and you know where they're coming from. I think we're going to see some of that. Also, talking about run defense, Staley's a five-man front guy, so maybe we'll see some of that. I know we were talking about Marshawn Nealon. I'm just
it branches out to project that,
the usage of some of these players.
Right. And if they go with the five-man set, then that also can take Hargrave back to what he did in Philadelphia with success. So I think that it's also a way to optimize him, is that that makes sense. The other aspect of this with simulated pressure is it now forces your hand to add players that can stop the run and blitz from the secondary. They don't have that.
Yes. And
Jair can do that. I don't know about the rest of them. So when you're evaluating a DB, part of that has to include the ability to defend against the run and blitz. And that's part of why Cooper DeJean gets talked up, because he's very good at those things.
Yeah. And when we're talking about simulated pressure, that's, I'll do my best to define it. You can help too. It's often when a defensive coordinator has 6, maybe 7 defenders kind of lurking around the line of scrimmage, and it's completely unclear before the snap which players are rushing. It could be 7. It could be 3. It's unclear, and it's new every time. It could be 2 defensive linemen, a linebacker, and a nickel. It could be 4 defensive linemen, and it puts a lot of pressure on whoever's setting the protections, whether it's a quarterback or the Niners, it's the center, to guess, figure it out, which way are we going to slide? Could be wrong a lot of the times. That's essentially what it is.
Yeah, well, it's taking the core concept of Shanahan's offense and applying it to the defenses. We're going to show you the same thing, but we're going to do 100 different things out of it.
Yeah.
And there's no way of knowing. The other thing with simulated pressure is that they can also time it up so that you'll have a delayed blitz from a DB and he'll be unblocked and straight to the QB. Mm-hmm. Kansas City did that very well.
And yes.
Baltimore did too. It's where their DB was the one that made the play. And so if the Niners are going to go to simulated pressure, they have to add a defensive back that can blitz and stop the run.
That's a great call.
So
is that Jair Brown? Is that Talanoa Hufanga? Is that Diamador Lenore? Like when Robert Saleh was here, he often used Kaywan Williams in that role.
And Jimmy Kaywan Williams was great at it, and Jimmy Ward too.
Yeah.
But they're going to need to add that now, because outside of Jair, you don't really have that skill set.
But Jair does have that skill set, and they didn't really, Steve Wilkes didn't use him that way.
He used him once, and he didn't get the blitz, but you know, there's ways that you can do that. You know, he proved throughout his career at Penn State that he could get to the quarterback. He can do that. But the Niners don't have a DB that can do that. They need to add one in this draft.
I'm not saying this dude's name, because I just said it in my head and didn't work out well. Every first-round pick is a scam for us, says E. Bosa is the only exception. Don't argue with me. Okay.
Brandon Ayuk would say differently.
He's the second exception. Malik Payton would say Brady said he's down to play for the Niners if they need him. You think they make the call if Purdy goes down?
No. Brady is set to be a color guy next year in the NFL. He's committed to that path now.
All right. There are rumors on Twitter that the Niners are inquiring with teams in the teens about potentially trading up if a certain player drops. Brock Bowers is interesting. He's like the one tight end who has elite grades and the potential to become a Pro Bowler. He's getting compared to George Kittle.
Yeah.
He seems like he'd be a great fit with Brock Purdy. He's from out here. He went to Georgia, where Charlie Werner went to. So you know the Niners like those tight ends. Yeah. Seems like I'm guessing the Niners probably gave him one hell of a draft grade. What do you think about the 49ers potentially moving up for Brock Bowers? What do you think about him as a player?
Well, I think that's who Kyle had in mind when he said, if a certain player drops, we want to trade up for him. Mm-hmm. I think that's Bowers, mm-hmm. as opposed to a tackle. And in terms of Bowers, he's got a complete skill set. He can block. He's not elite at it, but he's good at it. And he's a great receiver, and he's a Swiss Army knife. He can run. He can operate out of any number of different positions offensively. And so it's a chess piece that would have a lot of appeal to Kyle, is that he could use Bowers in a lot of different ways, and the Niners would finally have the 12 personnel that they need. They had a lot of success running 12 personnel with two tight ends. Can they make that happen with Bowers? They could. With the other tight ends in this draft, most, if not all of them, arguably are one or the other. They're not both. I can block, I can catch, or I can block and catch, but I don't have hands, or I can block, but I don't really know how to run routes. I mean, Bowers is the only complete tight end in this draft. And it could be that Kyle's looking at it and saying that, well, I went all in to get CMC and it worked for me and I got the chess piece that I wanted. If I now go all in and go get Brock Bowers, I can get the chess piece I want. So it's repeating that process, and Kyle's a fan of process.
Yeah, and it's like, this is probably Juszczyk's final year on the team. And when he's done, and he's already kind of fading out anyway, but when he's done, are they really going to find another all-pro fullback? Do those exist? So fullbacks, they're going to have
period.
Yeah, they're going to have to replace him somehow, and Juwan Jennings is going to be a free agent next year too. They're not going to replace him with a wide receiver. I don't envision Kyle becoming a base three wide receiver offense. So if it's not a wide receiver and it's not a fullback, it's probably going to be a tight end in a year that is starting alongside George Kittle and Ayuk and Debo. And this guy seems like he's as good as anyone they could possibly get. We know they're trying to get a significant upgrade at backup tight end for now. I can see Kyle trying to do this, but then again, he may not have the opportunity.
Possibly. Yeah, it depends on what the Jets do. The Jets have the pick at 10, and it's a question of what happens in front of them. So part of this goes back to the Chargers at 5. The rumor is they want to trade down. They're not going to take a receiver, even though they need one. They're going to try to trade down.
Pass on Marvin Harrison Jr.?
I'm sorry?
They're going to pass on Marvin Harrison Jr.? If he's there?
Well, I think Arizona is going to take Marvin Harrison. Got him.
That makes sense.
And then it's, okay, do you want Malik Nabers? And Harbaugh says, no.
No.
I'd rather trade down. And so the rumor is that they want to trade down looking for J.C. Latham or Olu Fashanu. If they do that, then Roma Dunze could drop to the Jets at 10. And they take him instead of Bowers.
Ah.
And if that's the case, then Bowers drops into the range that Kyle was looking at, 13 to 19.
Got it.
Now Bowers is in play. But if all of that doesn't happen ahead of the Jets and they take Bowers, or they take Bowers anyway, then that's not an option. He's off the board. But based on the rumors with the Chargers, he would last. Is that Odunze could drop to 10, the Jets take him. And then Bowers is in play.
Well, I want to say one thing just in terms of like football trends, philosophy. It does seem like if you have the opportunity to get a truly all-pro tight end, that is something you should probably move heaven and earth to get, because those guys win Super Bowls. And number one wide receivers don't necessarily win Super Bowls in the salary cap modern NFL because they're so expensive.
Right.
Yeah.
But you have to get it right, though. You have to get the tight end.
Right.
And in this case, it's the tight end in this system would be ideal, because you would have the two tight ends, and then he would be groomed to take over as the number one tight end for Kittle. And
then
Kittle could end his career as the number two tight end, where he's mainly a blocker but can still be a receiving option.
Yeah.
So it's a great slow decline for Kittle to move into and transition into a tight end two role also as he gets to the end of his career.
Yeah, my question would be, who's a better receiver, Kittle or Bowers?
I think that Bowers has more ability at this stage in their careers, but they're close. It's why Bowers gets comped to Kittle. but I think Bowers has more receiving talent. Yeah.
Okay. Let me ask you this last question on Bowers before we move on. Cause they probably won't get him, but if they do, how much better would he make them immediately?
A lot, because they succeed out of 12 personnel and they would finally have what they've lacked for so long, is that both tight ends would be receiving targets. Plus you're giving Brock Purdy another target in the middle of the field where he likes to operate.
Yeah.
So you're optimizing what Kyle wants to do schematically. You're optimizing what Purdy does best in throwing in the middle of the field. You're also helping your right-left balance in the run game by having a blocker on both ends.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of ways that this helps you.
And it does seem like 12 personnel is becoming the preferred dominant base personnel package in the league. I mean, Detroit uses it. Kansas City has really adopted it. They took off once they adopted it. Green Bay. And again, the Niners will probably be going that direction next year once Juszczyk is gone, because there is no next Juszczyk. So this will be interesting to see.
So we'll see what they do. But Bowers is one option. Another one that I would look at, I don't know if they would consider it, is to trade a pick to Baltimore for Isaiah Likely. And then you get a guy that has two-way ability at tight end and would give you a lot of the same benefits. Now, whether Baltimore is willing to do that is another question, but that would be my plan B, is that if you can't get Bowers, trade for Likely. He would really help.
That's another team that has multiple good tight ends. The Niners might want to get in on the trend. Yeah. Okay. Hold on.
Yes. Why would the Ravens trade Likely? It depends on the pick. I mean, if they got a second rounder, maybe they would be interested.
Yeah. Let's check out these draft lines and shout out our sponsor, BetUS, which is the number one online sports book. They're currently offering 125% deposit match up to $2,500 on your first three deposits. That means if you put in $500, you'll have $1,250 to play with. BetUS has 24/7 customer service and 24-hour payouts. Click the top link in the description to receive your bonus. We're also giving away 125% in free play. I've been doing this all week. The first five people to DM me their account to show showing me their account number on Twitter will receive $25 in free play. This is BetUS right here. Let's check out their newest lines. This is like who's going to go in round one. So the Niners have the second to last pick. These are the people they expect to be picked right at the end of round one. Bo Nix, Darius Robinson, Jordan Morgan. Jordan Morgan be a pretty good bet to go to the Niners. Just saying.
I'm not sure.
What do you think?
Morgan, I think that a lot of the national mocks are basically default. They're saying the Niners need an offensive tackle. The best offensive tackle left is Jordan Morgan. Therefore, I'm going to mock Jordan Morgan.
Sure.
The problem with that is Morgan being pass protection first. Is Kyle going to take a lineman like that when he prefers run blocking?
Especially on the right side. So.
Yeah. I don't think Morgan's going to be the pick.
So they also have Kingsley Sumatai at plus 160. If you think he's you got some good action there.
Yeah. Jershon Newton. That's Jershon another one Newton. That they could look at.
Yes, they could. Kool-Aid McKinstry. Tyler Guyton.
Yeah. Xavier Leggett. That would be an interesting pick if they decide to go wide receiver.
Roger Rosengarten, Marshawn Nealon. Plus 700, plus 800.
Yeah. If I looked at the Niners draft right now, I'd say that if they could come out of the draft in the first two rounds with Nealon and Rosengarten, they'd be happy. But that would be trading down from 31 and trading up from 63 to make it happen.
I'm going to put down Sumataya.
Okay.
Let's go with him. All right. ACC players, Big Ten players, Pac-12 players, first quarterback selected, first non-quarterback selected. Certain players specific draft position, final pick. What else we got? Third overall pick, fourth overall pick, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth. Blake Corum. Oh, now specific players. This is fun. Let's see where they got Brock Bowers going. The Jets, like you said.
Yeah.
Jets, Colts, okay, Chargers.
So Bengals. If we go one, I would go Jershon Newton would be my guess.
Jershon Newton, where?
People want me to take one player. That's what I would do.
Oh, for the Niners?
For the Niners.
Okay.
Then after that, Kingsley and Jershon. Okay.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. Michael Penix, where do you think he's? The Raiders, they say he's going there.
Raiders. Yeah.
Raiders. Okay. Jaden Daniels, Washington.
Washington.
Okay. JJ McCarthy, Minnesota. I can see Denver. That. Or Denver, plus 650.
Yeah.
Yep. Caleb Williams, Chicago, of course. Minus, wow. How much would you potentially win? Putting $10. 10 cents. I'm doing it. I want those 10 cents.
Oh, man.
I want those 10 cents. Yep. That's just, okay. Brock Bowers. The Niners are at plus 10,000. I want that.
Okay.
I want that 10 to win $1,000. Ooh, that would be pretty spicy.
Yeah.
That would be a pretty good promotion for BetUS if I won that. Let's stick with that. And okay. I mean, but there's just, they go on and on and on. I love props like this. I don't even think we'd call them props, but the draft, all the draft betting lines are at BetUS. Let me put $10 on all these. Lock it in. 10. 10. Yes. Cool. Place my bets. Confirm. It's a lot of money. I could potentially win. Uh-oh. I still want to. What? It's okay. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
BetUS, America's favorite sportsbook and casino. Live betting and racebook. We're celebrating 30 years with a historic offer. A 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits. Plus 10% gambler's insurance. Get started today. BetUS, where the game begins.
All right, Tom. It's a true story. About an hour ago, I was lifting weights in my garage, and the mailman walked up, and his name's Jose. Shout out, Jose, if you're watching right now. He said, Grant, what's going to happen between Brandon Ayuk and the 49ers? And I had to laugh because my brother asked me the same question last night. Shout out to my brother, Brian. And it feels like everyone's asking me like I have this inside scoop. I don't know. I don't know what to tell people, Tom. So what do you think is going to happen? What's the most likely outcome here?
I think the most likely outcome is the Niners punt. They're just going to say that if we can't get a deal done, then we'll roll you over to your fifth year. The problem with that is that Ayuk says, okay, and I'm going to hold out. And
I would say,
I'm not going to play early, and you're going to go 500 coming out of the gate, and you're not going to be the one seed, and it's going to be a lot harder for you to get to the Super Bowl if you do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the downside. But with the Niners, you know, my take on it is that they don't want to trade Ayuk because that would be saying that we're giving up on this year just in appearance sake. And so they say, well, we can't do that. But I think that, you know, trading Ayuk might be the best play. If they aren't willing to pay him his market value, well, how do you expect this to end? By stringing him along with the fifth year and then franchise tagging him? I mean, you want a happy player. You want a player contributing that's ready to contribute and motivated to do so. If you string Ayuk along with Hardball, I don't think you're going to get the best version of him, and you're not going to start the year well.
Okay, let's stay right here. I'm going to do devil's advocate for the sake of it, because I think I have a good point here, and I don't even know that I agree with making him play at the fifth year option, but you can make an argument for it because. Last two extensions. What are the last three extensions? Bosa, Debo, Warner? Are those the last three? In each case, the player who got the extension had a relative down year right after getting the extension. It happened. Don't know why. So you could argue, yeah, they're happy. Maybe they're a little too happy. Maybe that whatever $50 million signing bonus or whatever the guaranteed money is or having your life changed forever and ever changes things. Maybe you want a pissed off, hungry Brandon Ayuk. It's like, hey man, sorry, you want $27 million a year, not quite ready to give you that, but if you want to bet on yourself and have another contract year and stick it to us, by all means.
They could, but you know, that's kind of wishing that scenario into being, which the Niners are fond of doing also.
Yeah, well, it's doing something differently.
It is.
You know, it's doing something differently. I mean, some of these players do a lot better in contract years. I mean, maybe giving a guy a 4 or 5 year deal is for the sake of it isn't necessary. I mean, it's worked out. Fred Warner bounced back.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
In Ayuk's defense, I would say he's earned it. He put in the he put in the work, the effort, he elevated his game. Look what he did. And so from a team basis, from a morale, from a team character, and just who you are as an organization standpoint, rewarding Ayuk is the thing you should do. But if you're going to tell yourself, well, we're not going to spend $27.5 million because we don't throw enough, then trade him. Get a rookie receiver that fills right. that role instead.
Yeah.
Why would you want to keep Ayuk when you know that you're not optimizing what you can do with him? Yeah, I would much rather keep Ayuk and throw more, but that's for them to decide.
How many teams have multiple wide receivers who make more than $23 million a year?
Cincinnati might have that trouble, but
they might, but they're dragging their feet on the same on the issue too, aren't they? With T. Yeah. Higgins. Yeah. Yeah. So it's something that most teams don't want. Avoid.
No.
And what's crazy about the Niners is they're going to be in that situation. Could be. And then next year they'll have a quarterback who's a top five paid at his position too. So all of a sudden, like, you're in a position that no other team's in. So I think, and this is what I told my mailman, shout out to Jose, about an hour ago, is I think what the Niners might want to do in a perfect world is come to an agreement with Ayuk, considering he's so good and still ascending, and maybe trade Debo next year.
Or after June. Either one.
Or after June. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I think they would need to June
at the latest next year.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that we'll start to see evidence of that based on what they do in the draft. If they take somebody, now, if they trade down from the first and take Malachi Corley, that would be the easiest signal to read in saying that they're moving on from Debo. They're getting the Debo sequel. And so we'll see what they do in the draft as far as foreshadowing what they plan to do with Debo. But I would much rather keep Ayuk and move on from Debo, be it in June or next year. I think that's a better play for them.
Yeah. I just don't feel like the Niners want to make any drastic changes to their offense. That's the vibe I'm getting. They feel like it's really good. Results in the playoffs be damned. And they're going to run it back. So the idea of trading Ayuk or Debo right now doesn't seem like something they want to do. And I think from their perspective, they don't have to.
No.
Like, Brandon, like, you don't want our offer, and you don't really have all, you don't have leverage here. You think you do, but if you don't like our offer, we're more than happy to let you play at the fifth year option for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
So it could lead to that default, but
yeah.
Here's the scenario where they could trade him is if they say that they've got a team between 13 and 19, Bowers drops. And the team between 13 and 19 says, we want Ayuk. What will Shanahan do then? Now it's a tougher call for Kyle. Is that, does he want that second tight end to that extent that he'd give up Ayuk? I wouldn't. I think that, you know, your team is much better served to give up more picks now, keep Ayuk, and have a better overall team. But that could change the dynamic in terms of the decision points for the Niners. And the other thing to factor in is, you know, the Washington Post reported this week that Pittsburgh is still looking to try to acquire a veteran number one receiver. And so top of their shopping list is probably Brandon Ayuk.
Mm.
They're still interested.
We have breaking news. Bum, 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 bum. Okay. The Niners have signed Rock Ya-Sin, the cornerback. Been around for a while, was a second round pick in 2019 from Temple, played for the Colts for 3 years, was pretty good, went to the Raiders in 2022, was pretty good, went to the Ravens last year, did a whole bunch of nothing, but he's only 27 years old, 5'11", good tackler, good in zone coverage. What do you know about Rock Ya-Sin?
Well, he's basically a backup DB. He gives you some depth. It's the kind of move where it's you want to motivate your young guys to step up in competition and say that if you don't get it done, Rock Ya-Sin can step in and take your place. You know, this is looking squarely at Womack and Ambry and saying that, you know, you guys are going to have to compete to get a job. That's what this move tells me. It's not like Rock Ya-Sin can start in the outside corner. And I don't think he could. But he gives you depth and he gives you competition. And the Niners are trying to get their young guys at DB to step up.
Definitely. And again, he did come for the Ravens last year. So maybe he learned a little bit of those pressures. It seems like he could blitz a little bit.
Yeah, he could
blitz a little bit. He was a good tackler. Interesting. He may not make the team, but this sort of reveals what the Niners are visioning for their defense next year. A lot of zone. I bet you.
Oh, absolutely. With Staley, there's going to be a ton of zone.
A ton of zone, right? Because he's a Vic Fangio disciple, and that's what they do.
Yeah.
Rush four, play zone. But instead of showing which four you're going to rush, disguise it. That's pretty much what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's pretty much what they're doing.
And I wonder if it fits into that mold. Is that, you know, here's a player, again, it's like we were saying earlier, they need to add DBs that are more physical. Rockyasin fits that.
Good call. Hold on, Dave Barkas, I'm driving, so let's cut it short. I don't know. Thank you. Love you too, Dave Barkley. Well, Rockyasin and Isaac Yiadom, not exactly, you know, big-time impact players, but they are trying to address corner before the draft. I mean, does this affect the draft at all?
I don't think so. I think that this is far more aimed at just a competitive culture going into camp.
Like if Cooper DeJean were available at 31?
Well, I don't think DeJean would play corner for the Niners. I think he'd be there starting free safety.
Oh, okay.
And I think he's better used in that role anyway, is that when he can keep his eyes on the quarterback and read the field in front of him, he's more effective.
Yeah, he's a playmaker. Good point. All right, well, Rockyasin, nice to meet you. We'll see if you affect the Niners' draft plans. I don't think you will, but hey. All right, well, that's our show. Tom, thank you very much for doing this with me today.
Thanks, Grant. A lot of fun.
All right, I'll see you guys soon. Let's go learn about Rockyasin.